This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us on our radio Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. And especially thank you for joining us today, because we need to remind you we're in our fall membership drive, and we need members. Ashley Thornburg and I are scratching our heads wondering what kind of word soup can we put together to get people to pick up the phone or go online to get involved, because we are member-supported radio.
And you can become that member when you call 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Think about this weekend coming up, a great big full moon, the harvest moon, and it's on Friday the 13th. A very exciting weekend for sky watchers out there. And we celebrate all sorts of nerds, or the omnicurious, if you will. How about this fantastic gift offer? When you call 1-800-359-4145 and invest in quality programming at just a dollar a day, you will get a copy of the Dakota Datebook book. So at long last, the Dakota Datebooks have been compiled into a book. It's kind of like a page-a-day calendar, but of course it is a book, so don't rip it up. This comes to us from UND English professor David Haslin and his writing and publishing class. They made it a semester-long project to get this book out there. It's available to you at a dollar a day, 1-800-359-4145.
So I just looked at the September 12th entry in the Dakota Datebook book, and it's Cowboys and Dickinson. Here's the first sentence. In 1871, the spot that would someday become Dickinson started off as a Northern Pacific Railroad survey site. So did Fargo. Did Valley City.
Every 7 miles, there's a town, right?
Yeah. Well, they needed to have the water there. But this is a great book, and it's one, you know, day at by day, so that's why it's $365. But you can come in as a member at any level you want. This is, you know, pay as you want to, pay as you go. This is member-supported radio, and it only works if we have listeners who are members. So get involved. Give us a call at 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org.
And when you're doing it now during Main Street, you're doing it during that time of day that we're gathering around the radio or the smartphones, if you're in your car, or if you're at home, and you want to hear a conversation with authors, actors, scientists, culture makers, politicians, people who are doing things that impact you. We give them the time and the space to really get into what they're talking about, because you deserve that. That connection to the human voice, it's necessary, okay? I'm just going to say it. And that's what you are supporting when you call in during Main Street. It's not just a bunch of sound bites or that sort of ninja gotcha journalism. It is long-form, thoughtful, meaningful, interesting information. 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
It ain't cookie-cutter radio. Actually prepare for what we do today and every day right here on Main Street, because we know you expect it. You expect to get good information that is interesting to listen to. We hope we provide that. We know that we need members to keep it happening. So 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org.
And, of course, on Thursday we're going to have Sue Balcom coming up in the second half of the show. What a fabulous find she has been for the Main Street audience. We have our What's Happening calendar of event. On Fridays you hear from Dave Thompson. You get movie reviews from Matt Olean. We have a fascinating discussion on genealogy coming up right now, but you can call 1-800-359-4145.
Now we're going to talk about an upcoming event. The Heritage Education Commission in Moorhead is holding its 2019 Family History Workshop. They've been doing this for a long time, 44 years now this year, and it'll be held Saturday. It's September 28th at the Horizon Middle School East Campus in Moorhead. Joining me in studio is the president of the Heritage Education Commission, Margaret Cern. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And by phone, we have Alice Hoyt-Veen. She is from Iowa, but she's currently in Washington State visiting some family, and she's going to be one of the featured presenters. Thank you for joining us, Alice.
Thanks for having me on.
The theme this year, Margaret, is Hidden, Finding Our Female Ancestors. Why was this theme chosen?
There's a couple of reasons. The first of all is the amendment to allow women voting, which is
100 years old.
100 years old. So that was one of the pieces. And then the second one is this is one of the toughest areas for individuals to really research. Male research is easier because of names and such. So we really wanted to help out with the female research.
Okay. And Alice, what will you be presenting about at this particular workshop?
Well, I'll be opening the day with a presentation called Feminine Mystique, which will really focus on female research, the challenges and the opportunities. And then I have three other presentations during the day, one on land records, one on ethnic heritage, and one on documenting sources. And all of my presentations, all four of them, are going to have a feminine twist to them. So hopefully people will be inspired and come away with some tools and techniques to help them.
Alice, you are a board-certified genealogist. What is that?
Board certification simply means that I've submitted a portfolio of work samples to a peer-reviewed board, and I've been a board-certified genealogist since 2014. It simply demonstrates an understanding and an application of modern genealogical standards for research and for writing.
Margaret, let's get a little background on the Heritage Education Commission. What is its mission, and what are these workshops about? Who should attend them?
The mission for the commission is basically to retain history and to record history, whether it's family history, regional history, state history, those types of things. And the areas that the commission focuses on is this workshop. We also focus on oral histories and our awards for research. The workshop should be interesting to anybody who is interested in looking up and researching their family history. It's a big topic. One of the four sessions we're going to focus on is DNA, and that's a hot topic right now in the research of family history. And so if people are interested in that and are researching their female ancestors, that's the people who should be coming.
And I've attended a few of these workshops, and they cover a wide range of skill levels, if you will, from beginner to much more advanced. So obviously just about anybody who's interested in genealogy or their own family history can attend. What does it cost, and how long is the day, and all of that kind of stuff?
It costs $49, and we have four sessions where you can select one of five sessions to attend. So there's a lot of different options for people to pick and choose what their interest is and what they do. We also have a booth area where local societies and libraries bring in their information to help people understand what kind of resources are really locally available.
Okay, so it's coming up on the 28th. That's a Saturday at Horizon Middle School's East Campus in Moorhead. Alice, you mentioned the importance of documentation. I think a lot of family history is kind of oral history, you know, so-and-so did this and that, but where's the actual proof of it, you know? So let's talk a bit about that kind of research. What are you looking for?
When I talk about documenting sources and documenting a research project, it simply means that we're going to be careful in the sources we consult, but we're going to also document each and every source that we look at and collect information about the source itself so that as we share our final work with others, we can cite our sources and they have assurance that we have proven our case, so to speak, that this is a quality, credible study that will really last and stand the test of time for generations to come.
Well, Margaret, years and years ago, the go-to place for genealogical information was often the Mormon Church. Give us some other go-to places.
Libraries, we have a few sessions on actually internet research, which is, again, big. We have sessions on newspaper tools such as Ancestry.com and other family search and other internet websites that really help people find it online. So they're at home researching. It makes it a little bit easier than having to run to all the libraries or to go to a distant library to get your information.
You know, I had this DNA test. You referred to that a few minutes ago. And I was intrigued by the results because I thought they would be different than they were. They turned out they were exactly what my folks told me they would be. But I have heard from two people, at least, that I know pretty well, who had these DNA tests, and they literally discovered a close relative they knew nothing about.
Yes, I heard the exact same story from a commission member who actually found out that there's a whole town just locally here, you know, a few miles away, that he's related to basically all of them. So finding close relatives is really interesting.
The topic of the Heritage Education Commission's 44th Annual Family History Workshop is focusing on hidden, finding our female ancestors. That's this year's primary theme. Alice, what are some of the challenges and how do you overcome them?
Well, I think probably the greatest challenge for finding female ancestors, particularly as we go back through time, is that they had fewer legal rights. They didn't have the rights to manage property. They had limited ownership property. And so their records are more difficult to research because they didn't leave the same types of records as a man would have. But by learning to understand the men in our female ancestors' life, we can often find records where they are named. And that's the opportunity. Sometimes we overlook the opportunities by thinking we need to be looking at the exact same type of record we would for a man.
You are a sixth-generation Iowan, so I suspect you have looked pretty deeply into your family history. How far back do you go?
Well, the Hoyts I can trace to colonial New England. They settled in Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1639. So that's as far back as I can go in this country. And I haven't done a lot of European research. My focus and my pleasure comes in learning more about my American ancestors. But we're going to talk about some of the ethnic heritage, too, for Iowa ancestors. Of course, we all have an ethnic heritage of some type, and some of those challenges as well.
Well, this is a wonderful gift for families. As a matter of fact, my father years and years ago did genealogical research in our family, and he found our roots went back to Massachusetts and New Hampshire, too. I think it was the boat after the Mayflower, as a matter of fact. So it's kind of interesting how far back you can go. But this is a valuable thing, Margaret, to keep and to maintain in a family. I think it's hard to overstate how interesting it is to everybody in the family.
Yes, and one of the sessions we have this year is how to share your story through writing, because I think that even though some of us really enjoy the researching and looking up the information, it's really key that we write down what we find to share with the generations to come. And through that, we have our book awards, which also we accept submissions from all over that can be for your family research. It can be for research tools and such. And we will be awarding a number of awards at the luncheon to recognize the writing of a family history.
So there's a luncheon, too. It's a full day. It starts in the morning. It goes into the afternoon. And as I recall, the people who attend with their $49 get a substantial handout that has all of the presentations in it, a lot of information about how to go about finding this stuff out.
Yes, and that's one of the items that when we do our survey at the end that people really enjoy is all of the handouts are delivered in our workbook. And so we have all the handouts for all the sessions. So you can only attend four. And so you get all 20 sessions handouts to read through at a later date.
And if you want to find out information about the content of this year's workshop in great detail, you can just go online and search out Heritage Education Commission, and that workshop, the 2019 workshop, will come up. Click on that, and there's a PDF. There's all kinds of information about what's going on. The people who come to this workshop come from far and wide.
Yes, we actually have this year, we have a couple of individuals from Ohio, which kind of surprised me. But mostly we hit North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, and, of course, Iowa, now that Alice is with us. And so we do have mostly tri-state.
Well, I think a lot of families that at least the ones that go back, as Alice's and mine do, started in the Northeast, came to places like Ohio, then eventually to Minnesota and maybe elsewhere as well, because that was the migration at the time. Let's talk a bit about that, Alice. Land records, where people have been. Typically, if you purchased land or had some sort of property right, there's a record of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. There were two ways you could acquire property here in the United States. One is through a government, being granted land through the federal government or a colony or a state. And the other way would be a private sale from individual to individual or from a corporation or company like the railroad company who sold land to individuals. So it didn't matter if you had a 1,000-acre plantation in the South, or if you just owned one small city lot in a town somewhere, they all generate the same amount of paperwork. And that paperwork can be invaluable to us in establishing identities and relationships and following migration paths through time.
Alice Hoyt-Veen has a website, prairierootsresearch.com. And on that website, Alice, you've got a blog. What are the sorts of themes or items that you cover in this particular blog?
Well, my blog focuses on Iowa and Midwestern research. Obviously, since Iowa is my home, it is, and I've been there, our family's been there for so long, it is of special interest to me. But a lot of the writing that I do focuses on research techniques and historical perspectives that really relate to the entire upper Midwest, because we do share a common territorial type of history. So I have a tremendous interest in the territorial era and then the development of the Midwestern states and the records, the research we can conduct here to learn more about our family.
Oh, Margaret, coming up, we've got in 2020 another census. Every 10 years we do that. And this is another online asset, I think, for people to find information, that census records going back a long way and military records going back a long way offer insight into family history research.
We are coming up on the census, and most researchers are waiting for actually 2023, because that's when the new records in the 1950s will be available for us all to go look and find out where our people ended up.
So if you're of a certain age, as I am, that would be of particular interest. I'll be watching for that. But all of this stuff is available online now, or a lot of stuff is, that what before required you to go to a place like maybe Salt Lake City or to find a professional like Alice Hoyt-Veen to do it for you.
Right, and that's we having a couple of sessions to help people look at what the opportunities that are online so that they can do their research locally, they can do their research from home, and that's hopefully will help them with that.
Margaret Zern is the president of the Heritage Education Commission. It's based in Moorhead. We're talking about the 2019 Family History Workshop coming up Saturday, September 28th. It's the 44th annual, so this is a popular event, long running. And one of the principal presenters will be Alice Hoyt-Veen, and she joins us by phone today from Washington State. Thank you, Alice, for being with us.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Aisha Roscoe. I cover the White House for NPR. I've gone all around the world asking questions on behalf of all Americans. One of the best parts of my job is hearing from you. Thanks to your feedback, I'm able to pursue stories without losing sight of NPR's mission and the communities I represent as public radio newsrooms strive to reflect the diversity of America. You've reached out to me through Twitter, Facebook, and email to let me know not just how I'm doing, but why my coverage matters to you. I saw one tweet from a listener that really touched me. She said hearing someone who sounded like her on NPR was awe-inspiring. Seeing this tweet immediately reminded me of my duty to the public and the people who see themselves in me. When you support public radio, you're supporting one of public radio's founding ideals: speak with many voices. Here's how you can add your voice to the public radio community.
You can call 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. Main Street does bring a special focus to hear from underrepresented voices, voices that have historically been cut out of the conversation. That perspective, that nuance, that expertise, that life experience that deserves to be acknowledged, that is such a major part of what sets public radio apart from other programs that are on the dial. When you call 1-800-359-4145, you are experiencing a richness of voices being brought to you in the comfort of your own home. You can also make that donation online at prairiepublic.org. And why are we doing this? Well, it's because you members are the most important source of funding.
It's our fall membership drive. It's a reminder that we are member-supported radio, and you are the most important source of funding for Prairie Public. That is, when you look at the budget pie for us, almost half of the pie is membership. That's why we come to you a couple of times a year and remind you of that, because without you, we aren't here. So we encourage you to give a call to support Main Street and the other programs you hear on Prairie Public, and it's easy to do. It's 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. We look forward to hearing from you.
So we know that you are listening because, of course, you can hear us, and that means that this service is important to you. And how did it get to be that it comes to your ears? I'm going to be perfectly honest. It's because of the person who came before you, who made it possible for this to continue. Now, think about that staggering generosity and foresight that allowed this to be available to you today. And consider if you want the same thing for your grandchildren or whomever in the next generation. They deserve to benefit from the same quality news, information, music, and entertainment that you yourself are here to enjoy. You're investing in the future when you call 1-800-359-4145.
Now, you probably realize that if you're listening right now, that's been made possible by members who preceded you, as Ashley mentioned. They've been paying it forward, if you will, on your account. This is your opportunity to do another good deed yourself. Pay it forward for somebody else who's listening but not a member. We all have to get involved eventually because it takes a village for public radio to get out there. You know, we've got transmitters from Fargo to Grand Forks to Bismarck to Minot, Dickinson, Bowman, Plentywood, Montana, Williston. We're out there because you're out there. And North Dakota is a big state with a relatively small population. That's why we rely on you as members to help support this member-supported service, which wouldn't be coming your way if we didn't have you. Give us a call, 1-800-359-4145, online at prairiepublic.org.
And still to come in the second half of Main Street, one of our favorites, Sue Balcom. But now it's time for the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is hoping Congress will soon pass an infrastructure bill. However,
one of the big problems with infrastructure is that everybody wants an infrastructure bill, but no one wants to pay for it.
Ronald Eidsog is a vice president with the U.S. Chamber.
But coming up with a way to provide steady, long-term funding for infrastructure is one of the critical issues that Congress needs to solve. But clearly the needs are out there. It's time for Congress to get going and to work on that.
Eidsog says his organization has proposed raising the gas tax 5 cents per gallon each year for the next 5 years. He says there are some other ideas being kicked around as well, but he says in the short term, options are few for finding infrastructure money. Eidsog was a speaker at the Greater North Dakota Chamber's Policy Summit held in Bismarck this week. Officials with the UND Presidential Search Committee will be making use of the state's interactive video network this evening as they gather public input about the search process.
It's never been done this way before, so it'll be interesting, but we want to give everyone at multiple sites throughout the state the opportunity to participate.
Dr. Casey Ryan is co-chair of the search committee. He says the listening session will take place at Ivan Network sites on all 11 higher education campuses, along with one location in Watford City. Ryan says listening sessions have already been held in Grand Forks and Bismarck. He says at this point it's hard to predict what kind of attendance they will have at tonight's meeting and what kind of questions will be posed.
We'll probably hear the same things, but you never know, and it gives people the opportunity to get involved and realize that we're doing a significant search for University of North Dakota and want everyone to have the opportunity to be involved.
Ryan says the application process closes on the 15th. The list of applicants will be narrowed down before inviting candidates to the UND campus. Finalists from that stage will have the chance to interview with the State Board of Higher Education December 3rd. The one-hour interactive listening sessions begins at 7 p.m. Central. And some luck and good training saved the life of a farmer trapped at the bottom of a bin buried by hundreds of bushels of ground corn at a farm just south of Pelican Rapids. Fire Chief Trevor Steve says the victim was cleaning out a plugged feed line when he tripped a sensor, which flooded the bin with the grain.
This was another fortunate thing for us that it wasn't 70 feet in the air. It was on a elevator grain leg, so we're actually below ground. Went down there, found a victim. He was buried and had been completely covered, and they were able to run a little bit of the product out and get him so he could breathe.
Steve says firefighters used buckets to start digging out the corn and then brought in a giant industrial construction vacuum to suck out the remainder of the grain. Steve has had extensive training on such rescues, but he says very few victims survive these types of accidents. He says the 70-year-old man is fortunate. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg. And in our Bismarck studio, we have Sue Belcom.
Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Time for another installment of Main Street Eats. And, of course, we do this segment because all of us really love to eat. And eating in the way that is it feeds
healthy?
Your soul. Well, sure. But the community building aspects of food preparation, there's no shortage of that. And that starts when you are getting the food. And, of course, you are active at the Bismarck Mandan Farmers Market. And you have some tips for people specifically getting their food at farmers markets.
Right, because not everybody thinks about going to market. You know, in a lot of European countries, they only buy their food for a week at a time. And so they're always congregating at farmers markets, picking out their breads and their vegetables. And so I'm wondering, there might be people out there that have never gone to a farmer's market that maybe we could kind of encourage by telling them a little bit about how this works. First of all, I have to say that when I'm at farmers markets, and I do a lot of talking, as you probably already know, and people hear my voice, and I'm not kidding you, your listeners are farmer market shoppers because okay. I get people coming up to me all the time. They're like, I recognize your voice. Or I'll hand them a business card, and they're like, oh, hey, you're on the radio. I'm like, yes. So all of the rest of the people in the world, we want to encourage to come to farmers markets. So based on a few comments outside of my new notoriety, I hear these comments like on Sunday, somebody's like, well, it's 10 minutes to 12. I don't understand. Why isn't everybody set up? Well, dear friends, we love it in the garden more than we love it on the street. And so sometimes we're not always there right away at 8 o'clock when the bell rings for early sales. So if you really want something, don't wait till noon, because we're early birds. And so you have to come early to a farmer's market, because the people who shop there often will know that if you want a bushel full of picklers, you got to be there before 8. Our market starts at 8 during the week. And so if you're there at 8:30 sometimes, you know, oh, I'm sorry, but we don't have any cucumbers, and nope, the cabbage is all gone. And because there are people that understand that we pick it fresh, we like to sell it fresh, and then we go home and we start all over again.
So if you're looking for something specific and you know it's going to be at the market, get there early.
Yeah, absolutely. That, or if you get in there and you chat. Not when we're busy, but, you know, if you see us standing there by ourselves, which doesn't happen very often, come over and talk to your farmer. Talk to them about what you would like. And if they have a lot of cucumbers or a lot of tomatoes or something, they'll actually, you know, set some aside for you for the next market. Or you can make a transaction after or the next day. But it's nice, you know, go up and talk to your farmer, find out what they've got, and then tell them what you want, because we're happy to accommodate. There are many times when things start coming in abundance that there is extra, and we would love to be able to get rid of like 10 or 20 pounds of something. You know, they're first, you know, it starts out high demand, and then it slows off, and then something else comes into season, which is something else you should be mindful of. You know, is that these vegetables are seasonal. So we still, to this day, it's late. It's getting late and later. School's already started. And people are coming up and they're like, where are the peas? How come you don't have any peas? And we're like, you're kidding me, aren't you? Like, that's an early cold weather crop. And so you have to kind of, like, talk about, you know, learn about what's in season at your market.
Well, this is tomato season we're coming into now, and I know that the Red River Market, for example, the stands are kind of competing. There are lots of tomatoes there and lots of different varieties, so maybe they're on a sign somewhere. You can actually peruse without actually going in sometimes.
That's right. More and more vendors are actually putting up like the little stands on the ground. The easel-shaped signs.
Sandwich boards?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. That will actually tell you what they're selling or what they have that day. They're also, a lot of times, will use little table toppers, you know, and just tuck them in the basket. They'll give you prices, and they'll tell you what the varieties are. Some people, like myself, sometimes run out of time. You know, this isn't just, oh, yeah, we're going to bring boxes of vegetables. I think sometimes people forget that we're actually growing these plants, and we're putting them in the ground, and we're babysitting.
And we're
picking them. We're weighing them out. We're putting them in bags. We're creating signs. I do labels on all my breads. So the baking is nothing. It's putting the stuff in the bags and boxing it up, loading your car up, going to the market. And then you get inundated with people before you can even get it out of your trunk. And sometimes it's nice if you just kind of say, gee, you know, could you use a little help putting your canopy up? Or maybe I could help arrange this on your table. And some of us like to work alone, but there are times when I could use a friendly hand to, like, get my canopy up and out of the way of everything else. So,
I think you like people to buy you coffee, too, don't you?
Absolutely. Now, that should be a law, that you do not come to somebody's place of business with a single cup of coffee. I mean, we're there, and we don't, like, I'm by myself, so unless one of my kids show up, I don't get to go to the bathroom or anything. I'm, like, stuck there.
Well, you don't need any coffee, then.
Well, I know, but it's so nice to have coffee, and then hopefully somebody will come later on and say, hey, can I watch your booth for you while you run over and use the restroom?
My name is Honest Abe, yes.
I don't know if you would want me to watch your booth, though, Sue, because I'm looking at your cheat sheet of farmers market shopping etiquette, and I see one that I'm like, uh-oh.
Don't fondle my produce.
How did you know I was going to do it? I learn by touch. watching.
I know,
and how
right?
do you know if something is good and properly ripe if you don't pick it up and squeeze it
and
smell
it,
and rub your face on it?
Yeah, rub your face on it. Well, and a lot of times there are samples, too. So we do have to be a little careful about how much handling. But I've found that people that come to farmers markets are not so paranoid about you know, the fact that we're outside and we don't have, you know, a place to wash our hands. We do bring water and rags and things like that to keep clean up. But, yeah, don't, you know, if you're going to buy it, then that's fine. But sometimes people just come by and they play around or, you know, you never know what their motivation is. I'm like, don't touch my stuff, okay? I don't like when you touch my stuff.
Oh, no.
And heirloom tomatoes in particular are very delicate compared to the ones at the grocery store. I got to say this. I hope that the person who did this is not listening to the radio station. I don't know who it was, but my friend sells my bread over in Mandan while I'm in Bismarck because I can't be in two places at once. And she said, yeah, we have one loaf of bread left that we couldn't sell. She said the lady knocked it off the table, picked it up, put it back on, and bought a different one.
Aww.
Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, that gets us to another thing here. I mean, some people go to the market and they think it's a place to bargain.
Oh, yeah. See, that's, you know, it's maybe fine if you have a really, really good relationship with your farmer, that you've been buying things from them for years. It's the end of a season of something that they might give you a deal on, like a large quantity. But, oh, my gosh, you guys, you know, when I charge $10 for a quart of watermelon pickles and somebody makes a face at me like, oh, my gosh, how can you charge that? I'm thinking, how can you say that when you know yourself how much work it is?
And time.
And time. And then ingredients nowadays are so stinking expensive. You know, like jars have gone up exponentially. Even seeds. You know, six years ago, you weren't paying $4 for 25 seeds. And if you guys know me, I count them
and
to make sure I get my 25.
You don't have a pickle factory. You know, this is custom work.
Right. And we are really close to our work. You know, like we take a lot of pride in what we do. And we have that emotional connection to our food that is part of what you're buying from us. You know, you're coming to market and I'm giving you something that is of the best quality that I can produce that I would do for my family, what I would like to do for yours. And I tell you, I've had some really, really positive, wonderful responses from my customers this year. And I go home and I'm just like, oh, thank you, God. It's just so much fun for me, and I hope it's so much fun for them.
Well, I appreciate getting recipe ideas, too.
Absolutely. And we, in return, would like to know what you're doing with our products. So when somebody comes by and they're kind of like, oh, I've never even seen that before. What is that? You know, we'll give samples, usually, and then we'll tell you what to do to cook it the simplest way. You know, and then if you guys go home and you find some other great recipe that you want to share, bring that back to us, because 90% of what we do is kind of educate people about eating good, healthy, fresh food.
Well, the other thing that I notice when I go to the market, and I've started doing this myself, is I bring my own bag.
Good thinking.
And I, you know, I don't have any around, but I don't bring $100 bills either.
You know, or even like 20s, like that's usually what we have to prepare for, because that's what a ATM will kick out.
Right.
I do have a phone and I do have a Square account. And so I can take credit or debit cards. But really, when you're in the thick of things and you've got four or five people and they're asking you questions and they're throwing money at you and pulling stuff off your table, it really is very helpful for all of us if you bring smaller bills. Like, we're always out of ones and fives, always out of ones and fives. So that's a good thing to keep in mind, is while we would love to take your debit card, we really like cash.
Yes, and I think
you don't have that transaction fee. Then.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have that extra fee.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's all cash.
And right. So when you shop at a grocery store, you're talking about things that are just huge by comparison to what a local farmer or canner or baker is doing. And so, as always, the I don't even know how much money I make sometimes because I don't like actually pay myself except for like an occasional $10 cup of coffee. But, you know, I'm just happy that that money is going into my hands and then I can go to the local store and I can spend it on the products or the components I need to kind of make this big circle of food, you know, and it's all about the heart, you know, it's so support your local business people. That's what makes little communities really rock.
It makes bigger ones rock pretty well too.
Awesome. I always think of North Dakota as just one big small community.
We check in
one long Main Street.
That's right. Well,
thank
I love
you.
It.
We check in with Sue Balcom once a week.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, guys.
What's happening is next.
My name's Chris, and I'm a sustaining member of Prairie Public. Because I like to start my day with Prairie Public. When I wake up, I like to listen to Morning Edition, hear the news from North Dakota, from Dave Thompson. I can think of no better way to start my day than with Prairie Public. I'm Chris, and I'm a sustaining member.
1-800-359-4145 or click and join online at prairiepublic.org.
Well, that's the question we ask every Thursday. Ashley Thornburg and I look at our calendar of stuff to do in mid-September, and it turns out there are a few things to do.
Well, and let's just start with the fact that tomorrow is Friday the 13th. So
thank you.
That is exciting enough. But then we've got a full moon, and it's the harvest moon, and it's a micro moon, which just means that it's one of the farthest away, and so it looks small. But having that combination of events, good for sky watchers. Let's hope some of this rain starts lifting, some of these clouds go away, and just go enjoy some full moon magic on the overnight hours of Friday the 13th.
Well, the weekend is looking pretty promising.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. So that's my first pick of what to do this week.
Well, my first pick is going to be German Culture Fest in Moorhead at the Yemcombe Center. It's Saturday. It's a Volksfest-inspired day of traditional foods, drinks, and music. Polka favorites Dale Dahman and the Beats will be playing, and there'll be a German market. It is $10 for teens and adults, members of the Clay County Historical Society, and children 12 and under are free. So enjoy it Saturday. It's pretty much an all-day event at the Heritage Yemcombe Center.
So I mentioned that that moon is also often called the harvest moon, the nearest full moon to the autumnal equinox, and that means there is no shortage of harvest festivals. So I'll highlight one here in Dickinson this Friday and Saturday at Dickinson State University's King Pavilion Harvest Festival, fall fun for the entire family. There's going to be an outdoor movie, a craft show, food, of course, and a pumpkin patch and a dog contest, horse and carriage rides. So much fun going on in Dickinson for the Harvest Festival, fall fun for the entire family. And it's free 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And here's another German-inspired fest. It's Oktoberfest, which is the biggest one of all. This one is in Jamestown. It's Saturday as well at Hansen Arts Park. Oktoberfest beers will be on tap. There'll be German-style bratwurst and snacks as part of the admission price. Live music, German-style games and festivities. It runs from 5:30 in the afternoon till 8:30 in the evening. The cost is $35. Again, this is Oktoberfest in Jamestown at the Hansen Arts Park right in downtown Jamestown.
Kind of like a harvest fest, perhaps, a potato bowl
big game too.
In Grand Forks. There's going to be a golf scramble, a French fry feed, fireworks, a street dance, a pancake feed, and of course that big potato bowl football game with a homecoming parade. So Potato Bowl Week has events throughout the week, and you can just check out Grand Forks Potato Bowl Week for all of the happenings and times, but you don't want to miss that.
Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band is Saturday performing at the Fargo Dome. Bob Seger has been a rock star for a long time, half a century. In 2013, he did appear at the Fargo Dome with Kid Rock, but on Saturday, it's Bob and the Silver Bullet call it bad. The music starts at 8 o'clock. The tickets range from $43 to $120 plus fees. Bob Seger in concert at the Fargo Dome on Saturday.
The Hettinger third annual fly-in breakfast this Saturday at the airport. So there is going to be breakfast and a unique aircraft display. 7 a.m. to noon, and it's free. Go and watch some cool airplanes landing and then get to eat and be outside. What's not to love?
Barbecue Farming Fun Fest is Friday and Saturday in Wahpeton. Tailgating and a football game. The 150th Sesquicentennial Headquarters at the Red Door Art Gallery will be open. The free meal downtown in Wahpeton. That free meal will be Sloppy Joe, chips, and pickles. It'll be a salute to agriculture. It'll have a car show Friday and Saturday. Friday it starts at 5. Saturday it starts at 9 in the morning and goes until late. So take in the BBQ Farming Fun Fest in Wahpeton.
The Missouri Valley Intercultural Festival is this Sunday at the YMCA in Bismarck. Live entertainment, kids activities, food, crafts. This is Sunday 1 to 6, free, but donations are accepted.
Lunch Aid in Fargo is Sunday at the Sanctuary Event Center. You can raise money for student school lunch debt. The concert consists of 10 local FM area bands who will donate their time and talents. It runs from 4 to 7 on Sunday. There's a suggested donation, $10. Remember, this is to help offset student school lunch debt in Fargo. So, Lunch Aid at the Sanctuary Event Center Sunday afternoon.
My pick of the week is the Celtic Fair this Saturday and Sunday in Aberdeen, South Dakota at Richmond Lake Youth Camp. Any interest in Celtic heritage, history, sports, dance, come check it out Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., Sunday, noon to 5. Admission starts at just $5 for the Celtic Fair in Aberdeen.
My pick is the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater's Noises Off. If you haven't seen this play, it's a very funny farce. It's kind of a play within a play. It takes you behind the scenes in a play, as a matter of fact, and there's a lot of comedy, some of it slapstick. It's 7:30 this evening, and then Friday and Saturday, and it's at the stage at Island Park. Tickets range from $13 to $23, and that's what's happening.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 12th. On August 27th, 1896, Mr. and Mrs. Gordon Jefferson welcomed a baby into the world. Earl Vincent Jefferson was born in the Steele County Township of Colgate. The family moved to Hope in 1902, and Earl entered the school system there. He graduated in 1914. His life was off to a promising start, but on this date, in 1918, the Hope Pioneer announced to the community that Earl Vincent Jefferson had been killed in action on a battlefield in France. By all accounts, Earl was an industrious young man. The Great Northern Railroad hired him as a depot assistant shortly after his graduation from high school. The railroad appreciated his work ethic and determination. By 1917, he was in charge of the depot at Bremen on the Fargo-Surrey line. He seemed to have a good career ahead of him, but that was not to be. The United States entered World War I on April 6, 1917. Draft age at the time was 21. Earl, still 20, was too young, but he did not feel right about staying home when so many others were heading to the front lines. He had to ask his parents for permission to enlist. Knowing how patriotic Earl was, they reluctantly agreed. On July 29, 1917, Earl went to New Rockford and proudly enlisted in Company B, 2nd Infantry of the North Dakota National Guard. Earl continued to demonstrate the same dedication that had earned him a promotion with the railroad. He was immediately chosen as corporal. Within a matter of weeks, he was promoted to sergeant. Earl was sent to Newport News, where he served as quartermaster sergeant. He shipped out to France in April of 1918. He earned another promotion to master sergeant. He saw action in several battles. His letters told of living in the trenches and going over the top, but he assured his parents that he was well and would soon be home. On September 4, 1918, Earl's parents received the dreaded telegram from the War Department. They were informed that Earl had been killed at Chateau Thierry on July 23rd. he was buried in France. His body was eventually returned home to Hope. Today's Dakota Daybook is written by Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
My name is Dr. Dave Haslin. I got started with the project just by listening. I moved to North Dakota 6 years ago. I found my local public radio station. Dakota Datebook came on every morning, and it taught me so much about my new home state that I became a huge fan. I teach in the Writing, Editing, and Publishing program at UND, and so we have one semester, and it's called the Practicum class, and the goal is to try to make a book in a semester, which is very hard to do. I think it came out perfectly. Yeah, I'm astounded. I think it looks great. I'm proud to have my name on it. I'm proud to have my name on it next to so many amazing institutions and so many great writers. I'm pretty happy with the curation job my students did, and I think it turned out beautifully. I like Prairie Public because I know I can always learn something new when I turn it on. I like public radio because it helps me feel at home. By listening to Prairie Public and Dakota Datebook, I felt like I understand where the state was coming from, so I could help be part of the evolving story.
Well, our thanks to Dr. Dave Haslin and his students, because what I'm holding in my hand is a hefty book with 365 entries, because it's the Dakota Datebook book. You know, you've been hearing Merrill Pepcorn for years do those little snippets of history we call Dakota Datebook. It's one of the most downloaded podcasts we offer here at prairiepublic.org. It's of great interest to people, students, and schools across the state of North Dakota. A buck a day, $365 membership to Prairie Public gets you this book, and it's really worth it. It's fun. It's
yes.
Interesting.
1-800-359-4145 is the number to get that book. I know a lot of people are really good at planning ahead and getting ready for the holidays and not being like me and doing the day before and going, now what am I going to do? Get this on your gift list. This is a great gift for many a North Dakota history fan. It's available at just the dollar a day level when you call 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
It takes a village. It takes members to keep Prairie Public on the air. That's why we remind you of that a couple of times a year. And we've been reminding you all week, and it ends tomorrow at 6 o'clock. So it's important that if you haven't made that commitment and you've been thinking about it, this is the time to pick up the phone. Give us a call, 800-359-4145, or online at prairiepublic.org, or use that smartphone you've got and text 484848. Follow the link we send you, and we will be very grateful.
And, of course, when you contribute during Main Street, you are contributing, you are being in support of all of the offerings that we have, not just Dakota Datebook, but we hear from Tom Ezer, and we hear from Chuck Lura, we hear from Sue Balcom. Man, I know it was within 24 hours, and I even think it was the same day that she premiered that I got an email that just said, wonderful, wonderful. So a great throwback to North Dakota's own Lawrence Welk, and in celebration of that German-Russian heritage and her infectious laugh and ability to just make us all want to grow things and get back in touch with our roots. You are supporting all that you hear on Main Street when you call 1-800-359-4145.
And Friday on our show, the third annual Disrupt Well Summit is coming up in Bismarck. The summit focuses on disruptive technologies or innovations that will create new markets. We'll talk with the executive director and a featured presenter tomorrow on our show. And we hope you'll tune in, and we hope you'll also become a member of Prairie Public if you aren't already. For those of you who have, thank you, and have a good day.